Why don't you tell everybody who you are?
I'm essentially an electrical engineer, graduated from University of Tampa, attended the Polytechnic Institute of New York. I've worked in the military-industrial establishment for a number of years, worked on many secret projects, including the Montauk Project.
Okay, are you now, are you retired now?
I consider myself semi-retired. I've been forced to be semi-retired.
Okay.
I have my own business now.
You have your own business, all right.
Yeah.
You want to tell us what kind of business?
We do electronics manufacturing, small manufacturing, R&D work, testing. We do rebuilding of electronic equipment for the small industries in Long Island here.
Very good. All right, Preston, what in the world is the Montauk Project still going on?
Yes, it is.
It is?
Mm-hmm.
When did it begin, and what can you tell us about it?
Well, as far as we know, it traces back to about 1947 when they decided to restart the Philadelphia experiment to find out what actually went wrong and why the people on the boat were not able to take the field. As we've all heard before, the Philadelphia experiment is where they attempted to make a Navy ship radar invisible. They got total invisibility and the thing disappeared. And they got sucked into a hole in hyperspace between 1943 and 1983. So what actually happened is they did a lot of R&D work. The project split into two. The engineering went to Los Alamos, we believe, and that's where they developed the stealth technology that's on the third level of the stealth aircraft these days. The other part of the project, which was the human factors project, went to Brookhaven National Laboratories, which was the largest human factors research in the United States. This is now about 1950, we believe. It joined what was known as the Phoenix Project, which was a very large, all-encompassing research project involving research into the human mind, the mind of man. Starting back in World War I and World War II with propaganda, PA systems, leaflets dropping, this sort of thing, it evolved up through chemical research, drug research.
Hmm.
After they spun their wheels a lot of time out of Brookhaven Labs, they got the stealth technology user-friendly. That means human beings could take the field. I cannot go into what that's all about because I did sign security on that.
They made you sign a paper.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you get employment, anything that they have you sign, it would be illegal and jail time to talk about. You'd be convicted of espionage.
That's right.
See, on the Montauk Project, they use different methods of security, which we can get into a little later, where I never signed for it.
So there will be some of it that you can talk about.
Yeah, the Montauk Project I can talk of because that I never signed for. In fact, officially, I never existed on that project.
Oh. Well, all right, let's back up a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm sure that you've heard Al Bielek's description of the Philadelphia experiment.
Yes, I have many times.
Do you agree with or quarrel with it, or do you think it's accurate, or do you know of any inaccuracies or anything you'd like to correct about what he said about it?
Well, essentially, what he's saying is very controversial. I believe there are many different tests of radar invisibility, total invisibility, that the government research did attempt in World War II, and he's reporting on one test. If you read the popular Bill Moore book, Bill Moore compiled all sorts of information, which was on a number of different kinds of tests, different kinds of procedures used. This is why the book is somewhat confusing. Al is speaking essentially from personal experience, excuse me, and talking with a lot of other people that he's come across, just as I've come across people. The Philadelphia experiment did happen. It was definitely a high-energy physics project. There is other information coming to surface saying that Nikola Tesla had a input to it in the beginning.
Correct.
And you know, Dr. John Eric von Neumann definitely did work on it. He himself told me that. And I think Al's idea of what happened on the boat is pretty much correct. Because also I've had the same idea from other witnesses, like Duncan Cameron, who was also on the boat with Al.
So all right,
I really
so
don't have any quarrels with Al.
So then you think the story is essentially correct?
It's essentially correct. I think he may have missed some items and some of the points.
One thing that that I've found, as I've interviewed a lot of people who talk about time travel, talk about alien spacecraft and the way space might be warped and the way it might be jumped across, in fact, and the technologies that they're talking about are strikingly similar to the one that Al Bielek told us about.
Well, again, we're discussing here what happens when you pulse a magnetic field to extremely strong levels. It's well known in the quantum physics world that if you pulse a magnetic field beyond, I believe it's 1,000 Tesla field strength, it is highly possible to bend space and time. Now, if you can control this, it is theoretically possible to gain control of space and the time continuum, which would lead to the ideas that all this stuff you hear coming out of the UFO legends has some scientific basis behind it. Although a lot of your physicists will not accept the idea that there are parallel multiple realities, but your quantum physics is beginning to accept that idea at this point, and a lot of them always have.
What was the mission of the Montauk Project? What was the what were they trying to do, accomplish? What was the central theme?
Well, after the stealth technology was developed, it was suggested that this is the first time we have definite evidence that the mind of man is sensitive to electromagnetic fields. Let's research this further and develop population control. We can weaponize this thing as to make the enemy surrender. And, you know, I'm sure the possibilities are mind-boggling at this point. Congress said, no, we don't want this. This is mind control. This is too politically active. They were setting up to research literally mind control technologies. They went to the military and said, would you be interested in this kind of a weapon? Of course, this is every tactician's dream. So the military said, yes, we are, and they gave them the old Montauk Air Force Station, which is only about 40 miles away from Brookhaven Labs. Mm-hmm. That they can do this stuff in secrecy and not be under the watchful eye of the congressional committees.
Well, when you say mind control, what exactly were they able to do to a person?
Well, they were able to essentially inject a thought into a person's mind, make them believe it's his own thought, and control what you're thinking and therefore have some effect on what you're doing. They could literally read out what you're thinking. They could modify your thought patterns.
Oh. What?
And this was done at a distance using radio waves.
At a distance using radio waves.
That's what this whole thing was about. Remember, it started by studying the effects of electromagnetics on human beings in the
right.
stealth technology. And it evolved into this device that could literally reach into a person's mind.
At a distance.
At a distance.
And
up to about thousands of miles. We're not sure exactly how far it was.
All right. You said you can't talk about the technical aspects of whatever allowed, the biologically friendly fields to be applied. Mm-hmm. But can you talk about the technology that allows mind control? Or is that one
yes,
of the same?
Yes, because I did not sign for that. They use mind control to make anyone that worked on the project forget what they did.
Well, all right. What technology is behind that? I know radio waves, but radio waves generally are totally harmless and without effect to biological entities. They're all around us.
Well, this, as you've probably been reaching, this is coming up to a lot of debate at this point, exactly how harmless are these electromagnetic waves.
That's true.
Most of our waves that we do deal with in our environment are what we call continuous waves, CW, like coming out of your radio transmitter.
Right.
Human beings are sensitive to pulsed waves, fast on and off, semi-random fractal-based type modulations in pulse form. They use pulse frequency and pulse amplitude. It's a very, very specialized form of modulation resembling some very modern chirp-type radar signals.
All right, so it's a true pulse then. It's not just a pulse modulation?
It's a true pulse. It's a frequency-hopping pulse.
Frequency-hopping?
Yeah, it goes from frequency to frequency to frequency. If you tune it in on a radio receiver, it just sounds like a crack at a particular frequency. Then it goes to another frequency, you got another crack, and it hops around from frequency to frequency. Montauk had about 20 different frequencies. They hopped between 420 and 460 megahertz.
420 and 460 again, that's interesting.
Yeah.
The Russians are using something or another that we call the woodpecker.
Well, that's down at HF.
That's HF, is correct.
Right.
But, and so
that's the same, similar type of modulation scheme.
Is it?
Again, it's a pulse with a chirp inside the pulse.
Oh.
I've looked at the Russian woodpecker. In fact, we have what we call over-the-horizon radar here, which looks almost identical but much more sophisticated. And when that first appeared on the air, I called the FCC and asked them what it was, and they said it was the American version. It was the American over-the-horizon radar. And I said, oh, you mean like the Russian woodpecker? And he said, yeah, it's our version of the woodpecker.
I see. And so you're saying that with the right kind of pulse in the right frequency range.
Not the frequency range, how you hop from frequency to frequency. So remember, you're building essentially a hologram, a holographic type information packet out of delta frequency information and delta amplitude information and delta phase. Of course, phase and frequency is the same. Remember, you're dealing here with very fast deltas. You have to integrate this into essentially a random ordered white noise pattern built very much on fractals.
All right. Let's assume then that all of this, which is going to begin to get above some of their heads and perhaps mine as well, all of this would affect a biological entity.
It's a very unique type of radio signal.
The next question is, how would you make it specific to any particular biological entity, particularly at a distance?
Okay, that is very interesting itself. See, at the Montauk Project, we use what we call a witness, or a signature. A signature is a group of frequencies, an electromagnetic frequency transform, which represents a particular human being, like a set of fingerprints. You would proceed a holographic thought with the signature, transmit the thought, and then, you know, follow it with the signature. That signature would identify it as a person's particular thought. All you would have to do is identify the person's signature, and as the signal was being generated, it would be transmitted with that signature. Montauk essentially was what we like to call a mind amplifier.
So, yes, okay, I'm beginning to get it. So an individual then is required as part of the, in effect, the transmitted portion.
Yeah, the overall signal that was being transmitted was generated by a human being at Montauk.
Uh-huh.
They had a group of sensors that picked up his holographic thought pattern, processed it through a very large computer system, and then put it into a modified radar transmitter. And that's where I came into the picture. I was the one that was in charge of modifying the radar transmitter.
Oh, that's incredible. Oh, I see. All right, so that's how you got into this.
Yeah,
you were
they
actually
essentially built a mind amplifier.
Yeah, I understand, a mind amplifier.
And
you
that led to all sorts of things, including mind control, precipitation of objects. You know, there were all sorts of things that were done from this.
Well, let's say
they were able to create an object out of the background ether. Because if a person sitting at the input of this could visualize that object in their artificial reality or virtual reality, this equipment had the capability of making it real. We're talking probably at least 100 million watts continuous, not pulsed, power that they had out there. The thing was modified to what's known as beam use, which had 100 megawatt continuous power.
Did it actually create an object, or did it create the vision of an object?
It could do either one, depending upon the fidelity of the transform being reproduced through the equipment. Like, you could picture if your signal coming out of your transmitter was complete enough, it would be theoretically possible to recreate you at the other end. The reason you can't is, one, the receiver doesn't have enough power, then the information channel from the transmitter to the receiver is nowhere near high enough fidelity in the other dimensions and realities required to do it. This is what we tried to do at Montauk, was bring up this fidelity factor of broadcast.
What could you get an individual to do? You say you could put an idea in an individual's mind. How much power of suggestion could you accomplish?
Okay, after? I really don't know, because that's the logistics of the project. You remember, the information was very compartmentalized. Now, legend, this is a report from people who I've spoken to, told me that they can get a person to do almost anything they want. This is the way it was put. That almost the sky was the limit.
God, that's incredible.
They wanted to program somebody to be an assassin.
Preston, is time travel possible?
Well, the thing you have to keep in mind is, if you go into pure metaphysics, the non-physical mind is a ripple or a transform or a form on the space-time continuum. If you're going to get your way into the non-physical mind, you got to generate a time wave, which is like a warping or a repetitive bending of the time function. Now, if you could get into this, you have the remnants of a time machine. Now, I know when things were being created out of real time, what I mean is when the concentration would be at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and the object would appear early or after that time, they got very excited, shut the project down for a couple of months, and sent us all back to school to learn about time. I know they were interested in time manipulation, but of course, who wouldn't be?
Yes.
Now, being that we're compartmentalized, I have no personal knowledge of how successful the time portal, per se, was. Again, people who had worked with the time portal tell us that it was stable, that it was usable.
Meaning you could travel in time,
yeah.
Meaning physically travel to another time.
Okay, now, the newer quantum theories, even those theories appearing in Scientific American, are saying that there are multiple realities where time is different,
mm-hmm.
and because of the multiple realities, all time does coexist. And it's possible to move from point A to point B in time. And they're saying either it's possible to go into the future, which has a lot to say about, is the future predestined or isn't it?
Exactly.
If you can travel into the future, to me, it means that we're already predestined as to what's going to happen. I believe if you make a time loop from point A to point B, you're just predestined between point A and point B.
All right. Preston Nichols is my guest. He was involved in the Montauk Project. This is a fax that came, actually it's not, it came to me on America Online, on a computer service, internet, and it was Greg in San Diego. Your guest tonight has remarked that a particular technology had to be reduced to accommodate humans. Could he elaborate on that statement without violating the secrecy agreement with the government? In other words, is there anything at all that you can tell us about the adaptation of the technology to be biologically friendly?
Well, let's say first that there are three levels of stealth. The first two we hear about quite often, which is the radar cross-section, which is how much radar signal does the thing reflect. The second level is absorbing the radar signal. Now, if you've seen a picture or seen a stealth bomber or stealth fighter, you'll know darn well it's a huge pancake, and it gives a lot of radar cross-section.
Yes.
So they didn't do a good job there. And I have worked with the absorbing coatings in order to try to cut down reflections inside of component enclosures, and that stuff doesn't work all that well.
Composite materials.
Yeah, so what this is saying is there's got to be a third level. The third level is electromagnetic bottle. Now, how they made the thing user-friendly in a nutshell, this is alluded to in some of the aircraft publications, the electromagnetic bottle. They found out that when they cut off a human being from the natural background clocks, you know, the Schumann resonance and all this sort of thing, he had a tendency to become disoriented.
Now, well, no, I don't know what you mean. What do you mean when you cut him off from normal human clocks?
Well, the Earth has a clock. It's commonly called the Schumann resonance, discovered by W.O. Schumann, which every time lightning strikes in the cavity between the upper atmosphere, the ionosphere, and the Earth, this cavity rings. The frequency is around 8 hertz. It slews between 7 hertz and 9 hertz, typically, depending upon the time of day.
That's very low.
Yeah, very, very low. And this is sort of what clocks our biological functions. Also, this changing of this frequency from night to day is what causes us to wake up, go to sleep. It causes a lymphatic flush of the system.
Mm-hmm.
It also has a lot to do with the alpha, beta, gamma rhythms in the brain. Now, the other problem, they had to, the original technology created a solid field. They had to somehow focus this field into a shell so that the people were not getting irradiated by this large field. I'm not talking atomic radiation, but essentially electromagnetic radiation. There is a difference.
Yes.
But either one can be just as dangerous, especially when you're using pulse magnetic fields like they were using to bend space-time to the point where they're just outside of our continuum, so the thing was somewhat invisible, either radar or fully invisible.
Hmm. So you could get different levels of stealth depending on how...
Yes, you can.
Huh.
They go from either zero being in our reality or 90 degrees out being in the imaginary reality. At that point, the object is gone.
What are they doing at Montauk now?
Well, present day, it is a state park. It's listed on all the maps as Department of Parks property.
Huh.
The state park is annexed on to the Montauk Point State Park. It's known as the Camp Hero Park. Only thing is, the park is closed to the public.
Oh.
They got a big fence up around it. They got security on the base. They got an electric gate. And there's two power lines going into the park, each capable of multi-megawatts. Now, what's a state park doing with multi-megawatts?
Good question.
Now, we've also known that there's all sorts of activity. They have what we believe to be a faked program for reclaiming the site and detoxing the site. They talk of removing asbestos.
Asbestos?
Around the facility, there's these elevated pipes that they use to carry hot water, which have asbestos jackets. Even to this day, they haven't taken that off, and that's the easiest thing to get off.
Hmm.
And probably some of the most dangerous, because as the wind blows, that asbestos is powdering and being blown all over the place. So if they were really removing asbestos, that would have been one of the first things they would have gotten to.
Well, what kind of buildings are there?
They're demolishing a lot of the old derelict base building. We believe the active area is underground. We've had reports, and I know I've been in the underground, but we've had reports that there's now an 8-level underground, which is huge. Goes out for miles. Well, some of this could be exaggeration.
Is there anything...
We know that there's a particle accelerator out at Montauk as well.
Uh-huh. Is there anything else at Montauk that would justify that kind of a power to it on the ground, above ground?
It's a bunch of derelict buildings. One building is being used as essentially... The State Park Police cop lives there. Now, what the hell is he going to use with that kind of power? And secondly, there's a State of New York Parks Commission maintenance garage, motor pool maintenance garage. They have this one garage with these three huge transformers that I've heard anywhere from 1.5 megawatts to 10 megawatts going in. Now, even if they put in 1 megawatt of power, there'd be enough heat created to burn that building down. So, you know, what are they doing with this power going in that building? I say it's going underground.
Well, wouldn't it be...
Now, also...
Well, wait a minute. Wouldn't it be possible, Preston, to literally follow the power lines and find out if and where they go underground?
Well, the one power line goes underground at the place where the maintenance garage is.
Oh.
The second power line goes right to the white building where the cop lives.
Oh.
And we believe it goes underground from those buildings. Now, what I was also going to mention is there are some cement buildings on top of what we call Radar Hill, where the radar tower is, the computer center is, which is physically part of the underground. And if you put your ears up against the cement walls, you'll hear like machinery running. There are pipes that stick up out of the ground, and I dropped a microphone down, and you'll hear the whine of a turbine and the grinding of some sort of fan. Now, for a derelict station, what is the machinery that we hear running?
What do you think?
I'm not the only one that hears this. A lot of people have reported this.
I understand. What do you think they are doing there?
Some sort of something going into the electromagnetics of the planet itself. It's been suggested that the planet is tilting, and that's what they're trying, tilting on the axis, and that's what they're trying to prevent. Who knows? What they're doing is up to a lot of speculation and conjecture. All I can tell you is if you go out there at the right time, you'll pick up a very slow pulse transmission between 420 and 460 megahertz again.
Oh.
It's still out there. I got recordings of it. And also you'll pick up a very complex data transmission at 173 megahertz, which is in the guard band for Channel 7. That's why they can't watch Channel 7. If you DF these transmissions, it goes right to the old base.
Well, isn't that something?
Now, the 173 megahertz transmission, it was done by any civilian. The FCC would come and shut them down.
In a New York second. That's true. Do you think that that is some sort of remote control, perhaps? Or
It is some sort of a data link. What the purpose is, I really don't know, because I have no way of decoding it.
Uh-huh.
Because I recorded it, wideband recording, video recordings, and handed it to different people, and they tried all the known codes on it, and it doesn't decode. So some sort of government secret code, most likely.
Is there mind control going on now?
There are all sorts of transmissions going on right now, which are definitely psychoactive. Whether they're on purpose or accidental, I really don't know. And they seem to have effect on the subliminal level on our consciousness.
Tell me, you were saying, in effect, that what they were doing was amplifying the human mind.
Yes.
Can that be done with any human being, or are there some humans that lend themselves more toward that?
Okay, theoretically it can be done with any human being, but you want a person who is trained that when he concentrates, his whole fiber, his whole being concentrates on the one thing. That's a specially trained person. Theoretically, any one of us could be trained to do it if we went through the training and we had the capabilities and the qualities, whatever that is.
All right.
Duncan Cameron is a very unique individual, being able to, he can only concentrate on one thing at a time. He can't concentrate on multiple tasks.
Yes.
He's so trained to go one thing at a time. See, the human being has to create a virtual reality in his mind, and then the equipment picks out that emanations of that reality. So, of course, the more complete that reality is, the more complete the transform or the metaphysical thought form would be.
And so you're saying an individual using this process with that equipment could create anything from a material object to a being or an entity or a monster?
Well, we know that they could create objects. When they went to try to create living beings, they had trouble creating living beings because now you need a much higher degree of information fidelity.
I'm sure you do.
Yes.
Any living creature.
Being is much more complex with much more detail.
Exactly.
It's like taking a TV set and trying to put a 1,000-line picture on it. You just can't do it.
How far have they come in the fidelity area?
I don't know. Since 83, I have no knowledge.
What part did Montauk play, or what part do you know that it played, in the Philadelphia experiment? As I recall, Al Bielek said...
Well, Montauk is the place where the two sailors came to.
Exactly.
We're finding that there's quite a few sailors that came from the Eldridge to Montauk and did different things. And the Montauk Project was the other end of the time loop between 43 and 83. They used this totally fixed time loop in between 2 points, actually 3 points, 63 as well. They used this time loop as like a master loop to anchor open-ended loops. That means there's equipment only on one end. Uh-huh. Wherever somebody like Duncan Cameron could picture the time vortex going, if the fidelity was good enough, it would go there. But you'd have to have an anchor to hold it all stable, and that's what they used 43, 63, 83 for.
What made Montauk the other end of it? In other words, what focused on Montauk as the other end, or how did that...
Well, in metaphysics, we have what we call a witness. What this is, you take a photograph of a person. That photograph carries their signature, aura, whatever you want to call it. That's a witness. We made sure that we had a witness from Montauk to the Eldridge by having some of the equipment on the Eldridge, physically part of the Montauk system. We had people present that were on both projects, and then they used the Earth biorhythm cycle as the final witness effect and guaranteed a lockup of the two projects through space and time. And there's rumors that this may have even ripped open hyperspace enough to allow all the UFOs that have come in recently since 47.
Wow.
But it has made a major rift in space-time between 43 and 83, no question.
Another
What's
person
going to come in through that, I don't know.
Another person who sent me a fax wanted to know if any of this technology is alien technology.
Some of it is rumored to be alien technology. I do believe that this is testing alien concepts, either gathered from down UFOs or from the legendary alien treaty with the U.S. government, you know, trading people for technology.
Do you believe that that is true?
I've seen nothing to say yes, and I've seen nothing that says no.
That's careful. That's a careful
answer. Well, first of all, I'm not going to tell you something I know is false.
That's good. I'm glad.
All I'll tell you is I don't know.
All right.
I'll tell you what I do know about it.
All right. Again, let's go into the basic technology that's
Correct.
Allowing all of this. And in some detail, in other words, if I wanted to set up something that would bend space and time, or that I could... begin to focus waves to affect biological entities, what kind of technology would I use? How would I put it together?
Well, if you did it the way the government did it, their benchmark was, let's kill flies with a sledgehammer. Lots and lots of power. They had a final amplifier in their transmitter, which had an input of at least 200 million watts of power, wasted half of that in heat, heated the Atlantic Ocean with it, and put out 100 million watts. That means to do anything, you would have to build maybe one-hundredth of that. It means you'd have to build a megawatt transmitter and then pulse the thing, frequency hop it and pulse it. Then you would have to somehow correlate this to represent a fractal-based frequency-time transform.
All right, that gets a little complicated. Let me give you an analogy, and you tell me if this is a good analogy.
Go ahead.
It's possible, it certainly is possible, because it was done, to send a signal across the Atlantic Ocean with a spark gap transmitter.
True.
It could be done, but it takes massive, massive amounts of power that is very wasteful.
Which they didn't have in those days. They were transmitting some other form of electromagnetics. You consider the coherer they used at the other end need millivolts of signals. And if you transmit a kilowatt across the Atlantic Ocean, you get maybe 10 microvolts tops. How the hell did that coherer trigger? You tell me.
Well, my point was, you could send a spark signal across the Atlantic. It was done, but it required a very great deal of power. You can do it today.
There wasn't that much power.
Well, compared to the power that you, for example, with a modern a single sideband narrowband transmitter, mm-hmm. you could do it today with far less power.
You do about 10 watts.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So that seems like a good analogy to the beginning of the Philadelphia experiment versus the refinements that occurred at Montauk.
But still at Montauk, they used tremendous amounts of power. Because they were trying to bend the space-time continuum, and it takes tremendous amounts of power. Any quantum physicist will tell you that. It takes something like 5 and 10,000 ampere per meter magnetic fields.
Yes, but the original Philadelphia experiment was, as you said, kind of a blunderbuss compared to what could be done today.
Well, the Montauk project was much more finesse. That's why Montauk project controlled the vortex. They didn't control it from Philadelphia. They controlled it from Montauk.
Uh-huh.
Philadelphia was just another power source. That's all it was. It was an open-ended power source. They had no finesse. All they did was just generate tons of power, put it out in the ether, and by God, something happened.
What did you actually do? What did you work on?
I was started out as a technician, graduated up to an engineer. My responsibility was to modify the old SAGE radar transmitter. I was the fellow that set up the pulse modulation schemes, the synchrodyne modulation schemes, and set up the frequency hopping. I had to work on the COHO to synthesize local oscillators that were used in the transmitter.
What did they tell you you were working on?
They told me that we were working on equipment to interface human beings to technology, the mind of man, the technology, which was very interesting to me.
I should say. But you were actually working on the pulsing of the signal that would carry a transmission, not so much, that is, to affect other human beings, right?
I didn't realize this until later on in the project. This is what they were really doing. At that time, I was so involved in it, I couldn't see myself getting out of it easily.
Well, it seems to me that's a very, very dangerous technology. Very dangerous.
It's very dangerous, yes. I agree with you.
That's why
we all decided towards the end of the project to crash it.
You did. What I was going to ask you.
That's why the monster was created, to crash the project. Because Duncan especially was saying things that the rest of us didn't dare say. Duncan found God, got excised, we don't know what happened, but all of a sudden he calls a meeting and says, hey, this thing is going totally into the lower world and the lower domains, it's getting very evil. Of course, we all knew this, but we didn't have the guts to say it. And we all agreed, yes, yes, yes. What do we do? Well, we got to bring this thing down. How do we do it? Well, let's create this big, hungry, nasty monster that will scare them into crashing it.
Fascinating. And it worked?
Yes, it worked very well. All it did was drive them underground, just shut them down for a while. They're still doing it.
Now, back to Preston Nichols and the Montauk Project. Preston, are you there?
Yep.
Good. I've got a number of questions for you, Preston, faxed in, and then we'll get to the telephones. Art, I would like to ask Preston whether there is a possibility that the occurrences at Amityville, New York, could somehow be related to the Montauk Project. I got this thought while reading his book, Montauk Revisited. That's your book?
Yep. You mean the Amityville horror stuff?
That's right.
I don't know. I was involved as a parapsychology researcher years ago, and we really couldn't tie much of anything to that house. That's the only statement I'll make on it.
You were there?
Mm-hmm.
You were at Amityville.
About 10 miles west of here.
Very briefly, let's take a sidetrack because that's fascinating. What did you find at Amityville? I've seen the movie. I don't know how much relationship that has to what really happened.
Well, we checked the heat. We checked the heat differentials. We checked the static charges. We checked the magnetic anomalies. We didn't find anything. We didn't find anything to back up the bugs. We didn't find anything to back up the bleeding walls. I myself feel that this is something that maybe there was a genuine haunting, but the fellow that wrote the book just blew the thing way out of proportion.
All right.
So we couldn't find anything to back it up. So I was involved in a team of parapsychologists that was called in to investigate it.
All right.
There was even rumors of an Indian burial ground under the house. Who knows what really happened there? I don't know.
All right. Dear Art, I wonder if you would ask your guest if the Super Collider was in any way planned to be used with the project he was working on, Montauk.
No, because the super collider came afterwards. Although we have been getting a lot of information lately that they are using particle accelerators as particle beam weapons, of course, a particle beam power source, or a particle beam amplifier. This is where they use particles going to the velocity of light doing the mass energy conversion based upon E equals mc squared. I will tell the public that the physicists have reached the speed of light with particles and that they today are using this as a power source or a power amplifier. Imagine a power amplifier that can tap the power of a nuclear bomb, literally. This may be where they got all the power to bend space and time at Montauk. We know there was a particle accelerator, and I believe it's active today because once myself and other people walking over, it got a dose of some sort of radiation.
Well, I know this.
Such a radiation sickness for a while.
Preston, I know this, that they have considered using nuclear explosions or controlled explosions in satellites to focus beams. Is that
to focus a laser?
Yeah.
Yeah. I've read the same thing. That's supposedly a Star Wars weapon.
Exactly.
But we really don't need that. All we got to do is accelerate particles to C. They do it by starting out with a large accelerator, dumping into a smaller one, into a smaller one yet, and each time you go to a smaller and smaller one, the velocity just goes up. Remember, as you bring the particles closer in a circle, what happens? The momentum makes them go faster and faster. And at some point, you're going to reach C, the speed of light. And magical things happen when you reach the speed of light.
Well, what about surpassing it? Is it possible?
Not in this dimension.
So that, in effect...
100% correct. You cannot surpass the speed of light within our reference frame. If you're going to surpass the speed of light, you got to do it in another reference frame relative to ours. And I'm saying, I believe it's possible to go past it, but not in our reality as we know it. You got to warp into another reality to go past the speed of light relative to us here.
All right. Listen, this comes from St. Louis, Missouri. Please ask Mr. Nichols if there's a way that anybody can render himself or herself impervious to mind control by any outside force or protection.
Well, what you have to do is you have to consider the level of consciousness and awareness this thing is operating at, and you just got to raise your level of awareness above that. The mind, if it's aware of what's going on, the mind can automatically protect against this. That's part of why I'm putting this information out, to let people know what's going on so they got an idea of how to protect themselves on a subconscious level.
You're saying then, in effect, you can protect yourself with your own will.
Right.
All right, I've got it,
This is a message of the New Age, essentially.
So the New Age is mixed in with all of this.
Oh, yes. Very definitely.
All right.
This is the application of New Age metaphysical principles to technology. This is what we're talking of.
All right. Let us go to the telephones and see what's out there. For Preston Nichols on the wild card line, you're on the air. Hi, where are you calling from, please?
I'm calling from Bourbon, Missouri.
All right. You're on the air with Preston Nichols. Go ahead.
Anyway, I wonder if you ever heard of a guy named Edward Teller.
Yeah.
Okay. Have you
Rocket
ever read
science.
His book on the astrometrical universe?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and in there you realize that he talks about the unlimited power that is available through the antimatter.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a man who's very credible because mm-hmm. he invented the, and was largely responsible for the invention of the atomic bomb.
And he's also a rocket scientist.
That's absolutely correct. But we also know, you and I know anyway, and I don't know how many other people know, but he was also instrumental in some of the accelerators where they actually created antimatter.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
And when you have antimatter meet real matter, you have 100% conversion of energy.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's not good.
Well,
if you can tap it, that can be quite useful.
But it can be quite useful. And the fact of the matter is that you have an unlimited power source.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
When you consider the basic equation of E is equal to mc squared.
Yeah, we just heard that a minute ago.
That's right. You have a tremendous amount of power that is available.
Consider the power of one neutron, sir, accelerated to the speed of light.
That's right. And when you have that much
power... Something like a megawatt.
That's right. And when you have that much power, you could consider what 1 ounce of real matter versus 1 ounce of antimatter could do. And somewhere in our future, this is our new power source.
I think in certain sectors, this is our power source today.
You think it's already being utilized?
Oh, yeah. I've seen evidence of it.
God, you know, they talk about the danger of a nuclear plant going south and a meltdown, but
one of these accelerators goes south.
Well, that was my question, Preston. if one of these were to go south, it seems to me the planet would sort of blink out.
It might. We've often been, you know, friends of mine and myself, the nuclear physicists, often been joking, well, someday we'll say, gee, there used to be nice land out at Montauk. The particle accelerator went south, and now there's a black hole there.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, the thing is, most of these accelerators, from what I understand, I'm not a nuclear physicist, but I know three of them. They tell me that they use neutrons. I think we're all well aware of neutron radiation.
Yes.
And a nuclear medicine doctor that checked me out said that most likely I got hit with neutron radiation. Probably what happened as I was walking over the accelerator. Yes, they allow you to walk over the damn thing. They must have had a burp in the path, and it made a burst of neutron radiation. We all got it.
I see.
We all had itchy sores and sickness and felt disoriented for a couple of days afterwards. There aren't these nice guys that... They don't shut off the area where the accelerator is. They let you walk around that.
All right, on the wild card line, you're on the air with Preston Nichols. Good evening.
Oh, good evening, Art. Yes, sir, I had a question for your guest. Before the last commercial break, he spoke briefly about him and some of his colleagues turning against this project because things were getting, he said, evil. If you could, have him expand on that and tell us a little bit more about exactly what he meant by the evil nature the project was taking.
All right, where are you, please? All right, where are you?
Oh, I'm in St. Louis, Missouri.
St. Louis, all right. Expand on the evil part of your statement, if you would.
Well, I feel the whole mind control aspect of the thing is evil. Man is meant to have a free mind, not to be dominated. Also, they were working in maneuvering and manipulating time so certain people would have power that probably shouldn't have power, or the power group would get more power and they get more oppressive, and, you know, the whole nine yards of this.
Well,
and
I guess
also,
Preston, you remember the old expression, once they've seen something or another, Paris, how are you going to keep them down on the farm? Once they've experimented with mind control or imagine or know they can control minds, how are you ever going to stop them?
Only way I can see you stopping them is get the population aware enough that it just doesn't work.
Is there any way that a person could know that their mind is being controlled?
I guess if you start doing things out of character, that would be a good sign of it. Also, if you had the monitoring equipment, if you knew what to listen for, if you're educated in radio like you and I are, you could probably pick this up on a radio and notice the very sharp, edgy tones that would appear on your radio.
Hmm.
I can tune in and listen and hear the stuff.
All right, back to the telephone lines, and let's see what questions everybody has. On the toll-free line, you're on the air with Preston Nichols. Hello.
Hello, Art. This is Leonard from Albany, Oregon. And I've been listening to you and your guest, and the one thing you said just before the news were talking about all the bad things going on around the country, you know, the shootings and the mindless crimes and that kind of thing. But what I'm wondering about is actually changing the mind of people so that they might vote in a certain way, you know, like... And I've wondered about that sometimes when the polls, you know, say so-and-so is way ahead and here comes a competitor charging out of the woodwork, you know, with no apparent change in his campaign tactics, and all of a sudden, and I know there's, you know, the surveys, even the most scientific ones, have a margin of error, but sometimes it just almost looks like unexplainable, and I'm wondering if if they're already doing something like that, if that
it
might
could
be an explanation
be.
For it.
All right. It is a good question. Preston, do you think, something that specific, trying to get somebody to vote or act in a certain way, it certainly is possible from what
you've been telling us,
right?
It's possible. And what he's saying might be correct. I really don't know. I don't know where they're using this stuff tonight.
Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Preston Nichols. Hello.
Yes, my name is Charlie. I've had two quick questions for you, sir. The first being is on time travel. Einstein was asked a question on time travel once, and he brought up a very interesting situation, saying that if you were to travel back in time and prevent yourself from being born, you would create an absurdity because you already exist. And since absurdities don't exist in science, doesn't that mean that that time travel as far as going backwards is impossible?
Not impossible. It's just you become part of history.
Mm-hmm.
And you really can't affect history because you become part of it.
Wouldn't it mean that there would have to be almost two different... Is it possible that there might be two realities, parallel realities?
This is what's being suggested by quantum physicists today and a lot of other people. Parallel realities is what comes out of the whole metaphysical thing as well.
So let me understand this. There could be a reality which is just as valid, that I, Charlie, am actually, say, a host of a radio show, and say Art Bell is actually a liberal calling in. That could actually be a reality in another parallel existence.
There are some people that say what you think up in your mind is a parallel reality.
That's very interesting. One last point. I had been in a debate with a fellow, I think he was a Christian or something. Anyway, he was under the impression that the Earth was very young, about 6,000 years old. Clear this up. I mean, you're a scientist.
I don't know where he got that from.
Clear this up. Explain to the audience, because there's a lot of people out there who don't have any scientific knowledge. Could you quickly, I know this is a little bit off the subject, but could you quickly explain to people out in the audience who are listening why it's unlikely that the Earth is that young?
All right,
because
thanks, John.
There are many rocks that have been dated to be millions, billions of years old.
Well, that's a good answer, short, sweet answer, but you would say it is impossible the Earth would be that young.
That's what I would say, because, you know, the whole dating system in the sedimentary system that we have goes way beyond that age, way beyond.
All right. On the first-time caller line, you're on the air with Preston Nichols. Hello.
Yes, I have two questions. One of them, I was interested in Al Bielek talked about age regression, and I was interested if Preston Nichols knew exactly how to pull this off.
All right. Where are you, sir?
St. Louis, Missouri. And I have one more question.
All right.
Quick question. I have a book called Mind Machines You Can Build by G. Harry Stein, and in the book, it's a little diagram on an instrument he called a wishing machine.
A what machine?
A wishing machine.
Wishing?
Yes, it used the device. He says that it was, I guess, originally built back in the 40s, and he says it uses an audio amplifier, a couple of copper plates, an antenna, a 6-volt battery, and, you know, a couple other little simple things like that. And he said that you would use a pitcher, and you would put it in between the two copper plates.
This sounds like a radionics device.
Maybe so. Like I say, the name of the book is Mind Machines You Can Build.
Right.
But with this device, they said at long distances, they could, a 20-acre cornfield that was infested with bugs or whatever, that they would have a 90% kill rate just by consciously focusing on the picture.
Yeah, this is typical radionics. Yeah.
All right, thank you.
All right, to answer the man's first question.
Age regression.
Age, not AIDS, age. A-G-E is
right.
What we're talking of.
Right.
I'm not going to say this is impossible, because we have theories today which are stating that there's an energy lattice, a energetic replication of the DNA of the human being, which is magnetically coupled into the genome, into the DNA, and that there are many levels of DNA, and aging is essentially the loss of control of the differentiation of the DNA from the quantum electromagnetic pattern that we're calling a lattice. If you can somehow restore this control, theoretically you could grow back to whatever portion of the DNA you would activate. Now, Al speaks of being age regressed back to a one-year-old baby. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether or not the DNA is still there for that. If it is, I don't think it's impossible to do. Now, also, I run into one other person that the only thing that explains what's happened to him, and he's being truthful, I feel, is some sort of age regression. Now, I have not heard reports from other sources on this. See, when I hear a report like this, I consider where it's coming from, and I like to get maybe 5 or 6 reports saying, yes, age regression has happened. I haven't had it. I've only had Al Bielek himself, one other source, which I don't consider at all credible, and now the one we run into very recently. So again, I'm not going to say it's impossible, but also I think it's a quite fantastic story that I wish was true. I'd like to have it myself.
Yeah, you betcha. Look, if it is possible to travel in time...
And I don't know how to do age regression.
I was going to ask you, Preston, if it's possible to travel in time, and I went back to, say, 1950, my chronological age at the end of the travel would still be what it is at just roughly the moment I left, wouldn't it?
Yes, exactly. This is why I think if you're going to do age regression, you got to do something through the DNA.
Through the DNA.
You got to somehow change the differentiation to go back to the genome that you were replicating when you were like 20 years old, let's say.
Well, that would be a...
And, of course, the body would grow young.
That would be a very delicate genetic manipulation indeed, wouldn't it?
It may be electromagnetic.
Electromagnetic.
Because it's being suggested by a lot of learned geneticists that Dr. Glenn Ryan is showing a lot of research.
On the toll-free line, you're on the air with Preston Nichols. Hello.
Yes, hi, Art.
Hello, sir.
Yes, I'm from Long Island originally, and I just recently moved about a year and a half ago.
Where are you now?
I'm in Youngstown, Ohio.
Okay.
And now I'm 28 years old, and I'm intelligent. I know for a fact that I've got a 138 IQ, borderline genius. Yet at the same time, I've always wondered why I was never in tune with what was going on politically. I never could quite understand the political process.
You're not the only one.
Yeah. No, I'm from Suffolk County. I'm from Huntington.
Mm-hmm.
And I moved in, it was July of 81, of 91, rather. July of 91, I moved from Suffolk County. I moved into Elmont in Nassau.
Mm-hmm.
That was where I had...
We call it Suffering County and Nauseous County.
Yeah. That was where I first started listening to political commentary on talk radio.
Mm-hmm.
After that, I moved to New Orleans, and I really started to get involved. I started to know what was going on.
Well, what's the question?
Yeah, what is the question? How does this relate to my guest, sir?
Well, what I'm saying is, you're talking about mind control.
Mm-hmm.
As fantastic as it sounds, it's starting to make a little bit of sense to me. I don't know.
This is what a lot of people say. Considering,
I mean, I was completely blind.
Considering
blind
what's
when I was
happening, there's a lot going on.
Uh-huh.
That will fit this. Art was talking about the people just all of a sudden shooting.
It confounds me how I was so blind until I moved out of Suffolk County, until I moved off of Long Island, really. Now I'm just...
Well, here, you're sitting right in the midst of dissemination.
Exactly. It just sounds so fantastic. And Art, I can tell by your voice, the entire conversation you've been having, it just sounds so fantastic. But it makes sense. I don't know.
Well, all right, thank you.
It's based in real science, sir.
Yeah, I have learned long ago not to stick up my nose at what appears to be fantastic because I've been surprised too many times. And I'm sure of this, Preston, that we as human beings, our government, whoever, the powers that be, would have great interest in mind control, and if they're not working on it, I think that would be more fantastic than believing that they are working on it. I mean, it's that simple.
Well, I'd like to say at this point that if someone comes and asks me how much of the legend is true, I would tell them the Philadelphia experiment is true, the mind control aspiration, the mind control part of the project is probably 90-odd% correct. I'm just not sure exactly how well the time tunnel worked. That would be my asset, you know, my assessment of how successful they were.
All right, so
so I thoroughly believe the mind control worked, and it's thoroughly possible. The only thing is they could not at that time work on mass populations using the particle beam system that interacts with the brain directly. You don't need a signature anymore.
So,
using the particle beam system.
So you're saying that mass mind control is not necessarily possible?
Today it is. Today it is because...
Oh, great.
See, before, you used to go in with a signature to the non-physical mind. Today, they're using a particle beam to modulate the particle interchange between the synaptic interchanges in the brain, to either read patterns or to modulate patterns on the brain.
Oh, boy. So you're saying they could be sending out signals that are actually controlling the masses.
Mm-hmm. Synapses.
Wow. Wonderful.
Well, you have to consider, what is the synaptic interchange? It's essentially ionic, and what is ionic?
Yes, no, that's it's true. No, it's absolutely true.
If you can create interference from one particle to another particle,
you can
modulate.
All right, I've got a caller. On the wild card line, you're on the air with Preston Nichols. Hello.
Oh, hello, Art.
Hi.
This is Lance in Seattle, KBI.
Okay.
That mind control device that he's talking about is manufactured here. It's in a suitcase. It's like a small suitcase, and it says on the side of it, for animal control use only. And when it's used for people control, you can call the FCC and file a complaint, and they know all about it. It's nothing new.
Well, it sure is new to me.
I've been around since about 80.
What is it, sir?
Well, it just focuses on a specific part of the brain, and then your mind starts to look in that area, and you can see things in your own mind and hear things. It sounds like you're in a room full of people, and there's nobody around, or you can see eyes blinking in front of you and all kind of things. It's all in your own mind. It's not outside your mind like a hologram. But it does exist, and it doesn't take anything except call the FCC to find out.
Well, I've never seen one. I've never heard of one.
Well, just thought I'd add it to your program, sir.
All right, thank you. I've never... Have you heard of such thing?
I've heard rumors of it. I've heard rumors that this has been developed for years. See, what they're working there, that's mood control more than anything, I think.
I know, Preston, that there's been a lot of research done on the effect of low frequencies on human beings.
Exactly.
Is that what he's talking about?
Well, what he's saying is it can transmit the effect of a whole room full of people, the eyes, the head of you. All this might be doing is fragmenting your own memories, working directly, physically into the brain. And this could be done with some sort of VLF, ELF-type device.
All right. What about the transmissions made by the middle part of our country? Very powerful ELF transmissions to our submarines.
Yeah, I forget what that's called. I know what you're talking about.
I was just wondering if you think that kind of level of low-frequency transmission could affect biological entities that are close to the source.
That appears to be mostly sinusoidal teletype-type modulation.
Right.
It's not direct on and off.
So without the pulsing, you don't think there'd be a lot of effect?
No.
All right.
Remember, the mind itself, the brain will automatically even out a change in level. You got to change the level so fast that the DC restoration in the neurological system doesn't work.
Can't deal with it. All right, on the wild card line, you're on the air with Preston Nichols. Good morning.
Okay, you talk about time travel, right?
Yep.
Do you think time travel like happens in your psychic ability, your dreams?
Yeah, some people believe that.
Okay, now how can they apply this to technology and science and stuff?
essentially by taking what a person could dream or generating a virtual reality and transmitting it through a very powerful transmitter and bringing it into our physical reality.
All right, sir, thank you. That's exactly how it was done. In other words, the human brain does generate a signal. It is a very weak signal normally, isn't that?
Well, it's actually a virtual state signal.
It's what? Reduce that so I can understand it.
Well, you know, when you do a complex calculation to figure phase angle, you get sine, cosine function,
yes.
Real world imaginary function.
Yes.
The human emanations are based upon the imaginary functions, not the real. But you're 100% right. The real world emanations from a human being are very weak, but the imaginary world emanations are very strong. This is why you need typically vacuum potentials to detect this stuff.
On the wild card line, you're on the air with Preston Nichols. Hello.
Hello, Mr. Nichols. How are you doing?
Okay.
Art, I tell you what, you know, I wouldn't have bought this for a second if there wasn't something really weird going on in the world today. But my question is, and Linda Thompson talked about the holograph, and you were talking about cracking into the underworld. Could this be described as hell?
Hell is whatever you make it.
Well, I'm talking about, you know, the biblical aspects of what you're describing in the underworld. And have you ever seen any alien beings?
All right. Preston, have you?
Yes, I've seen some alien beings.
You have?
Who or what they are beats the hell out of me.
What have you seen, exactly? And how and where?
At Montauk, they had a little creature that looked all the world like the little grays as described by Whitley Strieber.
Oh?
About 4 foot tall, and they stunk to high heaven.
Stunk?
And then we had a thing that resembled a cross between a lizard and a human being. What it was, I really don't know.
I have heard that description before, too, kind of reptilian.
Yeah. The closest thing, there was an old Star Trek episode where Captain Jerk fought something called a Gorn that sort of looked like what I saw at Montauk. Now, I will say, I don't drink, I don't use drugs, I don't do any of that stuff. I also don't hallucinate. They were.
Have you ever been under the care of a psychiatrist?
Nope.
No? All right, I just had to add that one in there. So in other words...
That's a valid question.
Yeah. I mean, some of this, you've got to admit, Preston, it's wild stuff.
I know it's wild stuff, but this is why I doubted my own sanity at times. Myself.
I
come to the conclusion that it's not me, that I was seeing this crud real. Also, a lot of the other people at Montauk saw the same thing and described exactly the same.
How many other people have corroborated what you're saying, or even parts, substantial parts of what you're saying?
Oh, about 30-odd people.
30-odd people. All right. On the toll-free line, you're on the air with Preston Nichols. Hello.
Yeah, hi, Art. This is Sean calling from Last Best Place.
Hi, Sean.
Hi, Mr. Nichols. With the very low frequency, could we manipulate the weather to use the weather as a pattern for weapons against other countries, such as lightning?
This is called weather war.
Weather war, yeah. I read about it in a book called The Third Millennium.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with that book?
I think it is correct.
Okay, that's all I wanted to know.
All right, thank you. So you think the weather is being manipulated, Preston?
By somebody.
Do you think we're doing it, or do you think the Russians are doing it, or are we both doing it and getting it all screwed up?
Who knows? I don't know. Somebody is manipulating the weather, because I have picked up the signals. All you got to do is tune your HF receiver, and you'll discover increases in what appears to be the background noise over as little as 300 kilohertz bandwidth, band spread.
And that's some sort of spread spectrum?
Yeah, that's some sort of spread spectrum. And
wow.
If you take that signal and analyze it either amplitude versus time or frequency versus time, you'll get the patterns that will appear in the noise.
I see. All right.
And that's not natural.
Not natural. No, it is not natural. You're right about that.
And it goes up about 30 to 40 dB.
I've actually heard it myself.
Yeah, I hear it all the time. And I've been looking, what the hell have we got here?
Yep.
This may be involved in the weather control. Because this seems to precede weather fronts. Also, the same kind of signal precedes hurricanes that are brought right up to a particular area. You notice how the hurricanes are now taking nice straight paths?
Absolutely.
That's not normal for a hurricane. A hurricane is a centrifugal thing, and as the wall builds and depletes, it should spin and move and gyrate all over the map. No, they're going very straight at this point.
Wildcard line, you're on the air with Preston Nichols. Hello.
Yeah, Art. I'm curious. These kind of projects have to involve great deals of money.
No doubt about it.
And
no doubt, yes.
And they say to solve all mysteries, you follow the money trail.
True.
Isn't anybody checking what's going on? I mean, if Area 51 exists, there's got to be billions going into that. And if he's talking, there's got to be billions going into this. Is anybody keeping track of the money? Is
well,
there
you know, that,
to
that,
find
that,
out? Are the senators aware of this?
All right, all right. Hold on a sec. That's a good question. All I can tell you is this. I don't know about what Preston's saying, but I can tell you darn well Area 51 does exist. Billions do go into it. And that's a fact. And so, Preston, what about the money angle in Montauk?
Well, we had an interest from the office of Senator Barry Goldwater, quite a few in the middle 80s. And I was told that they could not trace any congressional appropriations for the Montauk project. Now, I was handed a list of companies here on Long Island that all either reorganized or out of business today.
Uh-huh.
The interesting thing to note is right after this happened, about 6 months to a year later, they started what they call core audits. They said they were looking for the $250 toilet seat. Why would they go ask the worker on the floor, what are you working on? The only reason they'd ask the worker on the floor, what are you working on, is they're looking for hidden projects. Montauk was a hidden project. There's rumors that the Montauk project was financed by gold smuggled from the Nazis. We really don't know. This is something that Al Bielek has suggested.
All right. Preston, hold on a moment. We'll be right back to you. My guest is Preston Nichols. He's talking about the Montauk project. All right, back now to Preston Nichols. Preston,
yeah.
You know, there are a lot of people listening or who would fax me or write to me or you and would say you're crazy as a loon. What would you say to them? How would you defend that? Now, technically, you have a lot of details, and I am impressed by that, but some of it is quite admittedly pretty fantastic stuff.
It's very fantastic stuff. The first thing I would mention is people used to say to me they remembered me from the Montauk base. I didn't remember them until I broke the memory blocks I had. This stuff is highly possible. We have a lot of witnesses. I think we have to look at, can 1,000 Frenchmen be wrong? We had no real-world documentation, evidence, proof. The only proof we have is that they're doing something strange, even to this day. And we were talking a 420 to 460 megahertz broadcast.
That's right.
And we're still finding emanations in the same frequency range to this day. I first got excited thinking I was picking up the signal out of time from the 70s and the 80s, but I came to realize, no, this is generated today. If they're doing something like this today, fitting the specs, sending out a very strong ELF signal that I picked up on coils as pulses without a carrier, and the carrier, if they're still sending out, that means the equipment I'm describing is there to this day producing signal, and it probably was there in the 70s and the 80s, and they probably were playing back then.
Well, it also raises an awful lot of questions.
Yes, it does.
For example, Russ, not just the shootings, the mindless headshaker shootings that are going on, but society's behavior in general
is strange.
Is very strange indeed, and
yes,
is deteriorating, in my view, and the view of most others who stand back and view it. Things are out of control. People, the state of civilization is less. People's tempers are short, And when it's the worst case, they're picking up guns and shooting each other.
Well, how would you react if you had a hammer pounding on your head continuously?
You'd eventually get irritated and do something awful.
Right. You got to think of all this stuff that they're sending out into the ethers, purposefully or accidentally, is like someone sitting tapping on your head with a hammer.
Well, it's true. It is true. It does.
Yeah. That's how they get 90-odd% efficiencies.
You're absolutely right about that. You're absolutely right about that.
You'll find I do know radio and electronics.
Yes, you obviously do. And I guess you could easily be right about the pulsed aspect of it.
Well, the neurological system operates on a pseudo-random ordered pulse function. You read any book on brain activity, that's the first thing they say. If you take the neurological signal out of a nerve, put it into an audio amplifier, it sounds like static.
Well, it has been a pleasure, Preston. I know you're on the East Coast in New York, and so it's...
I'm watching the sunrise right now.
Yeah, there you are. All right, Preston, a pleasure. Thank you.
Okay, and the pleasure's been mine, sir.
Take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Preston Nichols and the Montauk Project.